for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, here for another hour or so of non-league chat, debate and stats in the fourth qualifying round weekend in the FA Cup. And joining me and keeping me sane, or sane-ish again this week, a man who doesn't actually cite the FA Cup as being his luckiest of competitions, but he certainly knows all about the road to Wembley. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show and the studio, Mr. Dave Anderson.
Good morning.
It is a good morning.
If I'm keeping you sane, you're in trouble, believe me. But listen, FA Cup was okay for me. I think I got to the first round a couple of times and maybe got the second round once at Hendon with under Frank Murphy, you know. So, but still put shivers up the back of your spine, you know.
Well, that's what... Hopefully we'll be talking to a couple of guys today about the magic of the FA Cup when it's still there. And I think this round in particular, when you've got the first round proper looming, if you're in this round, then you can almost smell it, touch it, and it does seem that the excitement is certainly brewing around us.
It chucks up games like Notts County versus Bleeper Town, or however it's pronounced.
Belper Town.
Potter's Bar versus Barnet. You know, like, it just chucks up that. I think that's what excites me when you see, well, especially Potter's Bar, Barnet's logo. That's a big derby. They're quite close together. You know, that's what puts the magic dust on it. There's fixtures like that.
It does, magic dust around Hazelnutting United, where we're recording this today as well. After our victory against Hendon in the last round, and I know Dave saw the interesting goal from Hendon, which certainly made an interesting end to the tie, where our goalkeeper had been getting some treatment at the side, and then was running on the field, but wasn't anywhere near his own box as Hendon drilled home the restart kickoff. Really,
was it? Yeah, clever on their part, amateurish on the officials. Part I feel that you can let that happen. Is it pushing, as far as Hendon's point, is it pushing sportsmanship to the brink? Yeah, probably is, but there's no rule to say they couldn't do what they did. In fact, you know, I wish this was in a different place, but the day when we played the final at Wembley, I think it was when we went 2-1 up, the penalty kick, Crave, Ollie, Paper Mills were looking to, because we were all celebrating over with their supporters, and they were looking to kick off. But always remember Lubo Guenches, who is brighter than the average bear, he bent down in their half and tied his lace, which I would never have thought of doing. It was genius. So they were clued up to kicking off and sort of getting at us. It would have been interesting to see how the officials dealt with that. Have the officials done anything wrong by the rules?
I think the letter of the rule is, you know, they're fine. And you mentioned Hendon, you know, we had a good laugh about it afterwards. And
five each, you wouldn't have, though, would you?
Well, exactly. And that's the the wonders of technology. We've spoken about VAR being in at the higher level and us not being able to use that. But then you get the trial by social media afterwards. Yeah. And I know... Yeah, a friend of the show, Steve Baker, had a similar issue this week. Most of these games are being videoed now.
I think it's really good. I think it sort of adds to the debate. It shows it for what it is. Yeah, sorry to interrupt you, but Steve put on Twitter. In fact, it might have been the Horrorborough stream themselves put on one of the penalty kicks that was given against Harrow at the weekend. I say one of the penalties, the penalty kick, and I was a goalkeeper. I thought it was reasonable. Well, I was an international goalkeeper. I always joke about that. This ball was struck at a pace that if I'd have got a hand to it as a goalkeeper, I'd have been delighted. And it hits the Harrow defender. And even in slow motion, you can hardly follow the pace of the ball. There is no doubt that it hits the Horrorborough defender on the hand.
But if he has got reactions like that, I think the England Cricket Board should be signing him.
And you sort of go, well, how is that conclusion being drawn? How has a referee thought, That's a penalty kick. I revert to the Northern Ireland one last year when I was chucking my toys out of the pram in one of our qualifiers, World Cup qualifiers. Same thing. Nobody in the ground, Aharo or anywhere else, was thinking it's a penalty kick. You watch it again, you can't understand how they get it. Now, there's two chains of thought for me. One is the referee's out of his depth, or two is, and I've used that one many times before, two is, what's their directive? You know, what are they being advised from their senior people who try and give them a directive? Because I'd like someone, and if anyone from the referees union or any referee who has seen it, who wants to defend the decision, I'd love them to come on and state their case for us, because it's an absolute joke. And I think Steve said in his text that it had happened to him. It wasn't the first time it had happened this season. Anyway, with Steve Baker, we're hoping to, I haven't spoken to him, you might say no, but we're hoping to get him on. We're going to do a little manager's thing, aren't we, for once a month or something. And I think we'll try and get Steve on first. But yeah, I think both of them, in the Hendon situation, have they broke the rules of the game? I don't know. I think the officials, I'd like to hear what the officials feel of that. It didn't feel very sportsmanlike. But neither is diving or rolling over or.
Well, that's it. We have enough trouble trying to get officials, and you know, again, we both put our hands up. We wouldn't want to do the job, so we respect them and thank them for turning up and making sure that we can play games of football. Mm-hmm. But I think it's that we're at the higher levels. They've got the VAR now, and you've got the post match, or even during the match, you know, where it might be a 3-minute break while they're considering what's going on. You know, there's replays going back, slow mo rewinds, and that sort of. So then, obviously, fans are then adopting that in non league because we haven't got that, and then going back and retrospectively looking at this.
Yes,
so it's putting more and more pressure on the officials at our level.
I think you're right, and I think that they then come in for criticism. Listen, the one thing I would say, if I was in the ground at Harrow and seen that penalty Saturday, I didn't need to see it again to think it was a poor decision. But I do think you're right. But I think the plus side of it is that officials, surely officials would take any game that they've refereed on video, no matter how they've done them, and watched it. So it's a great learning curve for them to watch themselves referee. I had it many years ago where someone filmed me in a dugout, and it changed my life. It was an embarrassment, you know. So I'm not saying this from the holier-than-thou community. I'm saying I was shown what a mug I was in a dugout. So I'm just saying that the more that gets filmed, the more we can have debate, the more that referees can view it and hopefully gain experience and become better out of it. There is an underlying problem for me, and there has been for a few years, that the standard of refereeing at every level is below where it should be. How do you fix that? I don't know. Answers on a postcard, I suppose.
Okay, so to our first guest. Can you hear that? It's a sound of excitement building. Anticipation of the fourth and final qualifying round of the FA Cup that arrives with us this weekend. It's also the sound of preparations for our next guest, as not only does he join me on the line now, but I understand he will be joining me in this very ground on Saturday too. Let's talk FA Cup with a man who knows more about the competition than anyone else I know. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Mr. Phil Annette at FA Cup Fact File.
Hi, Tim. Hi, Dave. How are you both?
Yeah, good, mate. Looking forward to the next few minutes of your stats.
Let's hope I don't disappoint.
Oh, yeah. Never one to disappoint, mate. So the final qualifying round, the big one for all involved in non-league, there's just 32 ties, but some of the biggest games these clubs are like to play this season, if not for several seasons. The prize money is big, and it's a massive opportunity to swell the coffers. But there's also that bigger prize in the next round too. You have potentially Sunderland, Portsmouth and Ipswich Town amongst the other clubs you could play in the next round.
I know, that would be fabulous, wouldn't it? Particularly if one of the teams that are below the National League managed to draw one of those guys at home. It would be a fantastic occasion for that club. And there's several there that could do it, so it's a big opportunity. We've got at least four ties where there are teams below the National League who are facing each other. So we've got a guaranteed four teams from that level of the pyramid who will be in that first round draw.
Yeah, and I think there's plenty of opportunity for cup sets as well with the lower sides against National League opposition. And I think even hosting National League opposition gives them a slight advantage.
Yes, it does, yeah. Obviously, the TV has found Potters Bar Town hosting Barnet as the potential cup set. So they're showing that one live on the Saturday lunchtime match. But obviously, the team with the biggest challenge is Belper Town, who travelled to Notts County in what I think is a tie with the most intriguing information, and that would be the biggest upset of the round if Belper could get through. If you put it in context, Belper Town have never been beyond the fourth qualifying round before, and Notts County have never failed to be in the proper rounds before.
Wow.
So it would be a momentous achievement for Belper to get a result at Notts County.
Yeah, of course, there'll be plenty latching on to the fact that Notts County are in this round for the first time ever. But there's
not quite first time ever. Got to correct you there, Tim.
Yeah,
They actually played in the qualifying rounds in the 1888-89 season.
Yeah, Tim was only a boy then.
I knew I was missing a program from somewhere. Yeah.
No, I mean, one of those things is they're the first FA Cup winners or past FA Cup winners to have to play in the qualifying rounds since 1914-15, and a bit of a quirk of fate. The last club to do that was their arch rivals, Nottingham Forest. So that's quite a stat for the FA Cup this season.
This is the reason that we know that we have to speak to Phil every round.
This is actually the quietest eye ever. I'm recording in this period. I just shut up and listen.
I mentioned obviously about the prize money in the competition this year, which has made a massive difference to the clubs that have made progression. And obviously, this is the final round where the losers are going to be picking up some money as well.
Yes, it is. Yes, so. The losers, I think, get just over 6,000 for getting knocked out in this round. And the winners, they get 18,750. Obviously, this year as well, quite an interesting position with the Bury FC situation for the first round. That one team will actually get a bye in the first round and automatically earn the £36,000 prize money.
Have the FA said what they're going to pay out that prize money? There's always this fear in the back of my mind that a buy will mean that we'll put that money into a wider pot or something like that, which it sounds lovely, but not as the club that has lost that opportunity.
No, it sounds like they've made an official statement to say that that's what will happen.
Oh, good.
So, for instance, if, say, Chichester City should get through, I've started off in the extra booming round way back in August, and then they get the lucky draw of being the team that gets taken through to the second round. That'll be £54,000 on top of the coffers that they've already earned this season.
Decent.
Wow. And I'm sure probably Chichester City, as you say, started in that extra preliminary round. They probably earned more money this season than they probably have in the last 10 seasons of the FA Cup.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, they've won 5 FA Cup games already this year. I mean, if they were a Premier League club in the FA Cup, this would be their FA Cup final they'd be playing on this weekend.
Yeah, a tough time for them, though. They're over at Bowers and Pitsey, I think, aren't they?
Yeah.
And, but history in the making for both of them.
Well, that's right, yeah, because Bowers and Pitsey might be the higher team, but they haven't played in the first round before either. So whoever wins that game will get that prestige of being the first set of players to represent their club in the first round of the FA Cup. And I think there's another game as well at Royston Town versus Morden and Tiptree where it's the same situation.
Yeah, mate.
So whoever wins that game creates history for the club.
I'm going to make a prediction here. I'm going to say Morden and Tiptree will win that because they knocked Churchy out in the last round. Well, they hammered Churchy, and I spoke to a couple of the staff at Churchy, and they were really impressed with Morden and Tiptree. Said they were excellent, you know.
Yeah. And yeah, well, they've got an added incentive because I think the BBC has said they'll do the draw on Monday at their ground if they are the ones that win that match. Wow.
Royston will love me for that, but I had to say it.
obviously, we like to have a look at the lowest ranked club in the round as well. Now, that's Colne from the Northern Premier League Division 1 North West, I believe. But they've got a tough tie at Gateshead, and we're going to speak to the Gateshead manager a little bit later. But it's one of those that there's a story. Whoever wins that game.
Well, definitely, yeah. I mean, Gateshead have had their troubles in the last few years, so for them to get back to the first round would be a good achievement. But for Colne, it's outstanding. I mean, again, they've never been in the first round before. And it's not that long ago, 5 years ago, they were getting knocked out of the first qualifying round of the FA Vards. So they've come a long way in a very short space of time. And there's quite a few other teams like Peterborough Sports and Kings Langley and Potters Bar Town who are all trying to get to the first round for the first time. So there's a lot of clubs out there trying to make history for themselves.
Yeah, Peterborough Sports, one that obviously we've spoken to several times on the show in recent years, but I'm sure when they pulled AFC Fylde out of the pot, they thought, well, it's going to be a nice day out. But obviously Dave Challoner, the manager there, losing his job at the weekend. So if they don't appoint before the weekend and you get that new manager factor against you, they might be fancying their chances.
Well, I think they've got a good history of knocking out teams from higher levels over the last two or three years, so they'll fancy their chances.
That's just completely... So, yeah, he lost his job and there's no game. That was a weird one. You know, the game had been called off because Sutton had travelling difficulties. So you're never ever sure these days as a manager, are you?
No.
I did intimate earlier, Phil, that we have the pleasure of welcoming you here to the Sky X on Saturday. Hazenyetting United against Poole Town. Any encouraging stats for me?
Well, they've played each other just twice before in the FA Cup with one win apiece. So, you know, it could go either way.
I've been to both of those games, yeah.
Yeah. So it could go either way. They're both in the same division. It should be quite an intriguing game. But I don't think there's anything necessarily to suggest either team should beat the other. But for Hayes, it would be, I think, a record-equaling cup run if they got through to the first round. So there's that incentive for them.
What about the filler nets factor, though, where you've been this season?
Well, I started off well. I went to Chichester City, and that's done them no harm. But unfortunately, everywhere else I've been, I'm afraid the away team, I think, has been successful.
Did I say so, I was going to welcome you?
I think I used up all my luck with Chichester City, I'm afraid. there is one other tie I think we need to talk about on this weekend.
Is
Chesterfield taking on Wrexham. It'll be the fifth time they've met in the FA Cup with two wins apiece, but the last time they met in the FA Cup was in the actual quarter-finals of the competition back in 1997. So it's quite intriguing to see that two teams that last met in the quarter-finals are now meeting in the fourth qualifying round of the FA Cup the next time they get together.
That's scurry, isn't it? That can happen. Give us another one. Come on, one more.
One more. Have I got any more?
Pick another game. Give us a stat. You know.
Well, we've got Whiteley for playing Chippenham Town. There's a contest where the winner of that tie will guarantee at least equaling the best ever performance that club's ever had. So there's something to play for there.
Yeah, excellent.
And obviously, we mentioned the Potters Bar Barnet tie, which is the BBC's choice on the Red Button Eye Player situation. But we got another game as well, which is on the BT Sport, which is, well, again, a big game that people beyond non-league circles will recognise the names of the two sides there.
Yeah, two former falling league giants, I guess, in comparison to non-league. York City against Stockport County. Despite their league records, they've never actually met each other in the FA Cup before. So it'd be quite interesting to see how they get on at this level of the competition.
Well, Phil, as ever, it's been a pleasure to speak to you. I'm looking forward to meeting up on Saturday. I guess we'll have to keep you in a cool, dark room until then to contain your excitement.
Yeah, hopefully bring back the luck.
Phil, if Hayes lose Saturday, you'll never be on the show again. You know that, don't you?
there'll be a few people cheering, I'm sure.
Phil, just remind people where they can find out more about the other stats that you haven't been able to mention in your blog.
Yeah, so I cover every game of the fourth qualifying round on my Twitter account, at FA Cup Fact File. And also you can find a summary of the whole of the whole round on my WordPress blog account, FA Cup Fact File at WordPress.
Thank you very much, Phil. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, look forward to seeing you
Cheers,
guys.
Cheers, mate.
See you then.
Bye.
Cheers for now.
So what about a manager gearing his side up for the FA Cup this weekend? A manager fairly new to the role, and if Hollywood directors were looking for a new story to create into a film, he might already be one of those penciled in to follow. Just a few months ago, he was probably questioning his whole future in football. Now he's just a few hours away from a spot managing the side in the first round of the FA Cup. First up, though, a tricky tie in the fourth qualifying round against Colne. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show. Manager at Gateshead FC, Mike Williamson.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well,
cheers for what an intro that was.
Well, it probably didn't do you justice, mate. We'll come back to the FA Cup in a minute, but we should mention the year so far for you. I mean, you were a senior player at Gateshead last season, and there were the various ownership issues, wages issues. Was that maybe the toughest time for you ever in football?
I wouldn't say personally, no. I would say the situation was just, it was crazy. There was never 2 days the same. And there was always something, you know, something coming up off the field. And it was just, for me, it was all about just bringing the group closer together. And we built that mentality and that environment. And I think that's why we overachieved so much. Because, you know, the back end of the season, we had 14 fit senior players going into some tough games, and then obviously the lack of wages being paid and the instability. We got kicked out of our stadium and our training grounds, so we had to train at Hebburn and things like that. It became a little bit comical, but it just created such a strong bond in the team, which was just really good to be a part of.
It was really remarkable. You know, what you just kept getting those results, and you were up there challenging. And every day, as journalists, we're trying to find information out about what's going on. You know, but you guys just seem so focused on just playing football and enjoying what you were doing. As you say, enjoying being a group together.
Yeah, it was that. It was okay from the outside. A very serious situation, and like I say, for the fans and supporters, it was a tough time, because obviously the club that they followed and loved for years and years was rapidly going downhill, and nobody really knew if it was going to be salvageable. But inside the camp, in terms of the lads and their mentality, they were just such a hard-working, honest group of players. And as a senior player, It was a joy to be with these lads, you know, young lads that are striving, and, you know, a few of them have gone on and signed for league clubs, have done really well off the back of it. And I was just trying to, along the way, kind of just explain that when you step over that white line, that's when you've got no stresses and worries of the outside world. You just play your football, you do what you love, you know, everything else will take care of itself, which is proved for quite a few of the players.
And Mike, you know, now that that's behind you and it's, well, one, how has it changed? You know, how has it changed? Is it much easier for you now? So is that different? Is it, you know, when you have that sort of fortress mentality and someone pulls the walls down and everything's okay again, has it changed any? Tell me how you feel now as opposed to at the very start.
Yeah, well, it's a completely different situation. Yeah. It's from last season. Obviously, we had all the issues, and it was a bit of a circus, really, with the media and everything that was going on. So it's just like rolling with the punches at the time. It's just we were being very reactive to whatever came up the next day. But during the summer, it looked quite bleak at certain points for the football club. And then, luckily enough, there were just some very hard-working people that have got a lot of love and passion for the football club came in, worked ridiculously hard, diligently to get the club taken over. And then, yeah, from me sitting down and them proposing, you know, how they saw the vision in the football club going forward to now, it's been relatively plain sailing in terms of the football club. Initially, you have your issues kind of trying to recruit, because yeah, we had zero players. And we're off the back end of a season of just turmoil. So a lot of bad press, you know, a few relationships that have been bridges that have been burnt along the way. So it's just a rebuild, really. But like I say, the guys now, the board that have come in, they're just they're local people, and they've just got the club's best interest at heart. So it's a pleasure to be working here and moving the club forward.
You sound as if you did it all in an armchair, recliner armchair. You're a laid back lad, to be fair. You know, is that you're sometimes, listen, sometimes we sound calm on the radio, but we're a different kettle of fish behind closed doors. Is that your persona? You just take it easy, see how what happens, and, you know, no real jumping up and down, frills and spills.
Yeah. I mean, that's my personality. I'm very laid back, and I want to experience everything to the best of my ability. And having five children at home that keep
so
my feet
back
on,
all the time,
on the floor. So
you probably go to work to get a break, go to football to chill out for a bit.
exactly. What I was just about to say, I come into work for a breather.
Yeah.
So it is. It's one of them. Like the bottom line is, I love football and I love the competition and just finding a way of being the best version of ourselves and the team. So, and the rest of it is all just, you know, it can be very superficial. We can get dragged down a lot of it with stresses and strains, but a lot of, you know, when you close your front door and you're at home, you know, we all know what the true meaning of life is all about. So I love it. I enjoy every day of it. So I'm just very fortunate to be in this position.
I'll tell you a quick story because it adds in that I went to see Northern Ireland playing Rotterdam on Thursday, and I was called into the team hotel to get my tickets of a friend of mine. But I met Jimmy Nicol, ex-Man United, Millwall. I had a couple of friends with him, and he was telling them about being manager of Millwall, where they didn't like him and they're going to kill him, basically. And he said, talking about stress, his quote was, he says, people said to me after, how can you deal with that? It must be so stressful. And his line was, and it's his line, not mine, he said, listen, when your mortgage, your wife and your mistress are a month late, that's stress. So it just reminded me when you said it. But on your, to go back to you, Mike, from a player to a manager, player, manager, how do you see it now? You playing much? You're not playing at all?
I'm first name on the team sheet now.
And if you do that, what happens in the dugout then?
The backroom staff have got here, Michael Nelson and Ian Watson, and our physio Chris Bowers, and they're fantastic. Like Michael Nelson, obviously he's very experienced, he's got WAF experience, 700 games to his name, and Ian Watson, he's a SNC coach by trade, but he's doing his coaching badges as well. So all of the support I need is here, and it's been quite lucky in the fact that when I've needed to kind of add a niggle or have a rest, that now has played, and vice versa. So we've always got kind of two coaching backroom staff on the side, and normally one on the field. So it has worked really well.
And with sort of, intrigues me. Kevin McLaren's playing player manager at Church and I after me, and when he's playing, then Steve Hawkins deals with even substitutions because it's difficult sometimes to get the information onto you. You know, do they talk to you if they're going to make a sub on the pitch to get messages across? How does that sound?
I mean, before the game, we kind of we've got plans. We've got kind of a few loaded substitutes in terms of if we need to protect the lead or we need a goal or things like that. And then obviously we've got the different positions in terms of any injuries, and we know who can play where and shuffle around. So a lot of it is kind of predisposed. But to be honest, the last few substitutions, it's just I've got full confidence in Nelson and Busty. So whatever they think on the time, there's been a few times where I get so heated up, I'll lose track of the time, and the emotions are high and things like that. And they're off the field, so kind of out of that battle, they can see things with a clearer view. So most of the time, it's we've spoke about it, or if we get a drinks break. But normally, I've got full faith in what they believe and make a decision as a whole.
Yeah, and I would just finish by saying that some supporters, and I don't mean just Gateshead supporters, but football supporters would think, oh, is it really? But people within football will absolutely understand that, Tim. You know, they will understand that you have people in your staff for a reason. you have people in your staff that you have to trust, and when you shut the door and have meetings, you know, you although you have disagreements, you're all on the same wavelength. And if Mick's in the middle of a game with 20 minutes to go, the last thing he needs to be thinking about doing is making a change. So I absolutely get that, and it's absolutely the right way forward. But listen, good luck in your recliner. You know, keep being laid back.
Hi, thank you very much.
Mike, obviously, FA Cup this weekend, and I saw your interview after a tough win at Kidsgrove Athletic last round, and you mentioned you'd like a home tie. Well, you got that, and the lowest ranked club left in the competition too. Do you perhaps sense it's, everything that's gone on this year, is this maybe Gateshead's year in the FA Cup?
Well, I mean, one of the biggest cliches in football is taking each game as it comes. And they're the lowest ranking team, but that poses its own problems. So, they've had some good results. They've beat, Dunstan in the last round, and we know that they're a good team. So, we've had a few reports on them, and we know, what they're about. They've got big, strong, physical lad up front, and they can play good football, but they play up to him, play off him. So, we do know that we've got to make sure we turn up, and obviously the home time, we know what we're getting with the pitch and the environment and the surrounding. So, we've got a good home record, so I'm delighted for that. But yeah, it's one of them where the FA Cup is there to dream, and we all will do. And even this morning we've been talking about what would be your dream tie if you did get to that first round or third round. But the fact is, we've got a job on. So, and coming the kind of underdog brings the biggest potential banana skin. So we've got to make sure that we're at the races, and we've got the right mindset, and we apply ourselves like we do every other week.
Yeah, and I'm going to give you a bit of advice. Make sure you play Saturday, because they are uncomfortable games for a manager in a dugout. When you're that, everybody, if you win 6-0, people go, well, so what, but it doesn't have the magic of the FA Cup for nothing. So my advice, Mike, would be play and let your staff panic in the dugout.
As a side, I'm much calmer on the field. Not that you'd know it.
What about you? So you mentioned about your coaching staff and their careers and experience. But again, Mr. Laid Back and Calm, I mean, you didn't mention your own fantastic career as a player. What was it? Wickham, Watford, Newcastle, Wolves, Oxford. Any particular FA Cup memories or stories from your time as a player?
I haven't really got any FA Cup. I mean, obviously, we had a good run in the Europa League with Newcastle. And I suppose my most memorable was the Carling Cup with Wickham. It's Paul Lambert at the time. We got to the semi-finals against two legs against Chelsea. Which was my most memorable cup run. But no, I haven't actually got any real Newcastle. We were notorious for getting dumped out at the first round that we're in, yeah.
Well, so you know all about shocks then?
Yes. No, I have had my fair share of upsets along the way.
And just going back to the league, National North, mid-table, fairly decent start to the season. Because everything started so late, and you say, you're trying to pull a squad players together, were you set any targets for this season before it started?
We haven't done, no, because like you say, we were sat here in mid-June and we had zero players. So it was kind of just a complete rebuild. We were playing catch-up a little bit with a lot of teams. And we were getting a lot of knockbacks are based on the fact that you've got no players. So, we're trying to sell a vision of the club and where we want to go, but it's very difficult when you've got nothing to really go on. In terms of targets, I've signed a 2-year contract, and I said 100% sure I want to get the club out of this league in that tenure. But I think the way the season started for us, it's been very slow and steady, but we're picking up, and I think that we're starting to build and get better at the process that, I always talk about here with our values and our philosophies of how we play, and the beliefs starting to build. And, we've off the back of a few good wins. So we just want to keep that going and keep the momentum building, really. Because, like I say, we're a new group and we've taken a bit of time to settle down, but we're finding our groove now. So it's just, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So we're just keeping on going.
Just one last one from me. You've played under you must have played under some magnificent managers.
Yep.
And just off the top of your head, who have you picked up most from?
I've picked up a lot from different, and just, I mean, going from quickly, Paul Lambert was somebody who I just knew, that if you're an honest, hard working lad, he'd stand by you no matter what. And, yeah. I've had times where he's completely berated me in the changing room and then gone out on national TV and bigged me up. And it's those kind of little yeah. nuggets that I've taken from there. But, you know, when I was out with Alan Pardew at Newcastle, the intensive pressure that he was under on the outside, but he never really showed it on the inside. He had that calm, you know, exterior, coming in and around. And then with Chris Hughton, the humility of just such a genuine person, like he didn't need to, you know, be the hairdryer because you just wanted to win for him because yeah. he's such a genuinely good guy. And then, yeah, people like Brendan Rodgers, I was lucky enough to have 6 months of him at Watford and his attention to detail, and was just phenomenal. And his management was incredible as well. So, yeah, like I say, I've been lucky enough to have some fantastic managers. So you just kind of take as many little kind of yeah. traits from each one of them and try and put them into your own repertoire.
And yeah. that's why those Hollywood directors should be penciling you absolutely. In for a movie. Mike.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Best of luck for the rest of the season and at the weekend, and hopefully we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Well, what a nice guy. What a calm guy. And
impressive.
Impressive. He's got the pedigree and yeah. looks like he could turn into a very good manager himself.
Yeah, very impressed. I love calmness because it's not something that I am, as you know. So when you meet your opposite, it's always... I always find it interesting. I just thought he spoke loads of sense. He'd played under big managers and picked out big traits that if you can incorporate them in, you've no excuse really. And I've no doubt. I mean, the one thing that Mike did mention, and there's no reason he would. I think the biggest thing in management is recruitment, and if he recruits right, he'll be successful. And I haven't even been in his dressing room. But the old saying is, good players can get a bad manager out of jail, but a good manager can't get bad players out of jail. So if he gets good players, he'll be a good manager. You can just tell. I would say if he concentrates on who's doing his recruitment, he'll be fine.
So from a manager fairly new to the role to a manager as new to it as probably any we'll speak to this week, appointed this week as manager at Brighton Sea Regent in the Isthmian Premier, he certainly has a great pedigree both in league football and in non-league football, and it is a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show new manager at Brighton Sea Regent, Kemal Izzid.
Morning.
Morning. Kemal, I mentioned your pedigree as a player, so let's start there. Over 400 appearances for Colchester United, including captaining them into the Championship in 2006. Back then, did you think management might be a future career for you?
No, not probably then. I was probably a bit too young and a little bit naive and never thought that my football career was ever going to end, if I'm being totally honest. But as you get to sort of your late 20s and you're 30 and your early 30s, you then start thinking about what you're going to do after. It was only probably when I was about 31 and I started speaking to Eddie Boothroyd. He was the one who sort of said that you could see me being a manager, and then you start thinking about stuff that you want to do after football.
Yeah, and it's not that you're a novice to management, because of course you were previously had the role at Stanway Rovers, and then more recently you've been coaching alongside a man I know Dave Anderson knows well, John Coventry, at United. So why the move now into management again?
It's just, I wanted to be the one that makes the decisions. It was great working under John, and he was real good help, but you work hard all week on coaching, and I still will be coaching. I enjoy coaching and making players improve and making them better and getting my ideas across to the players. It's just when it comes to to team selections and formations and stuff like that and player recruitment, I've obviously got my own ideas and John Coventry has his own ideas. And it, not that it becomes annoying, it becomes a little frustrating that sometimes ideas are a little bit different and you just want to do your own stuff. And that's what it boiled down to at the end of the day, is that I was getting to that point where I wanted to be the one making a decision on who was playing, what we was playing, how we was playing, who was going to bring in and stuff like that. That was all that was.
That becomes a natural progression. That's something that will come naturally to people who are going to... Some people will stay and be an assistant or a coach all their days because that's what they like, that's what they're made up to be. But if you are a manager, it naturally comes where all of a sudden you go, well, I wouldn't have played that team and I wouldn't have played... And I said, John Coventry, yeah. John will understand all that, I guess, but it just is a natural feel, isn't it?
It is. When I first went over to East Berwick, I explained to John that I was always looking to try and get back into management, and he understood that and always said that any job that I would apply for, I would always let John know, and I obviously let him know about this one before I got it. I let him know before the interview, but it's just, even though I was only the coach over there, we would constantly have discussions. Any time he picked a team or he would mention a team, I was the one that would be the one that would question,
yeah,
do you not think that we could do this and this and this? And he would obviously ultimately have the ultimate say about what team he was going for. It was just, you see things differently. Everyone sees things differently. And like you said, it's just a natural progression. Some people just want to be followers and some people want to be leaders. In my case, I think I'm one that wants to be a leader. I want to live and die by those decisions that you make, and that's just the way I am.
And you know, just looking at the league position, you obviously want to get away from the bottom of the table as quickly as you can. How you know, what's the situation with the squad? Are you looking to add to it? You know. Just basically, what's your first thoughts? I know you've only been there for 5 minutes, but what's your initial thoughts of what you need or what you've got?
The initial thought that when I look at them is that we need to score more goals. They've not scored enough goals. Yeah. I remember when we played them, they were a little toothless going forward. And that's something that we need to improve on, whether it's bringing in players, which I think will always help because it shakes up the squad and give them a little kick in the backside, which some people need. I think that we're going to need to bring some forward-going players in. I think defensively they've done okay. I just think maybe they need some ideas on how to break teams down and how we can go about doing that. Do my job and showing them on a training pitch on how I think we can do it. How we can isolate 1v1s and 2v2s and 2v1s. And the quickest way of getting there, we're going to play some football. Of course we are, but ultimately we need to try and get the ball in the back of the net as quickly as possible, whether that's passing it 50 times or passing it twice and we get it in the back of the net. So we're gonna be organised. I'm going to show them the way that I like to do things, and hopefully the results come sooner rather than later. I'm obviously know that things aren't going to change overnight. There is a process to this, and getting players in isn't always easy, and the way you have to go about things is approaching players and asking for 7-day approaches, so things can take time. Yeah. So it's not going to be easy. I know that. I totally understand that. I'm not stupid enough to think that, oh no, it'll happen Saturday and we'll go over there and we'll turn these over because everything's changed. No, that's not going to be the case. It's going to take a little bit of time, but like I said, I want it to happen sooner rather than later, because you're right, we need to get away from that bottom three.
And what about... You know, you're talking about being on John's staff. What about your own staff? Have you brought your own staff in? And who are
they? No, the assistant manager that was over, I know Pip very, very well. I've worked with him previously when I used to run my own football school, and he was one that I recruited over to coach. He's a very good coach. He can play as well. So I've got a really good relationship with Pip, and so I know that I can trust him. I know that he can coach. So
well, he'll have a good insight into what you've got as well, won't he?
Exactly. So it was a no-brainer for me. It was someone that already knew what was there. He knows what's there. This Saturday, he will have a lot to say this Saturday, because obviously I'm going to be new. It's our first training session on tonight. So he will have a good insight on what's there. And then coming next week, I will take over the reins a lot more, and then we'll start improving on what I want to take over.
Yeah, you mentioned this Saturday. You've got a trip to Worthing, and then I think Potters Bar on Tuesday, depending how they get on. It maybe a FA Cup replay they might need. But it's Thursday night training. That's going to be your first chance to meet the lads. So I guess the long trips are maybe an opportunity for you to bond with some of the players as well and get to know them as people.
Yeah, that's I feel I like to do things a little different. When I spoke to the chairman, he said, do you know many of the players over here? Will you have a decent relationship with them? So what I said to him is that I think it can become difficult when you get too friendly to players. I just think that, yes, you need to understand and know your players, but what I won't be doing is I won't be making friends with them. I think it can just be difficult when you need to make tough decisions on whether or not they're staying there, whether or not they're playing. And so what I said is that, I know some of them. I said, but we're not going to be friends. I will be quite distant to them, and that will be Pip's role in being their friend and getting to know them. And I'll be the one that has to make all the tough decisions and upset some people, I would imagine. So I'll get to know them. I'll tell them that tonight at our first training session. I'm going to be approachable, don't get me wrong. I still want them to come to me if they've got problems or anything like that. But at the same time, I just don't think that you can become close with players. I think it becomes too difficult and can mask your judgment at times.
I think as well, Cam, that it's more of a balancing act as a young manager like you are. Mm. I think you have to be really careful. I mean, I think it's easier at my age. I'm a dinosaur. I can nearly be their uncle. Do you know what I mean? But when I look back, 100 years ago, you're right. If you socialise with them, back in the day, you'd have a few beers and whatever. And there was always a line, and you always had to. And the other thing is, if you have good players, they'll understand the line as much as you do. You won't need to enforce it too much, but I think you're right to address it.
Yeah, that'll be something that I will definitely, that'll be one of the main things that I say to them tonight, is that, because I know that they've run very, very different over at Brighton. See, it's very family orientated, and it's a very close-knit club, and that's brilliant. I love that feel about it. But at the same time, the manager and players, I think, have to run slightly different now. Call me what you like, but that's just the way I believe, and I'm still going to be approachable. I think that's the main thing, and I will tell them that. And if they've got any problems or they disagree with my views or opinions, they can come and have a chat with me. That's of course, but ultimately it's my decision at the end of the day, and they're going to have to deal with that. It's the way that I've always thought managers should run. When I've dealt with managers in the past, is when you go and ask someone, just be honest with them. Now, whether or not it's brutal honesty, and some people can deal with it and some people can't. If you give them your honest opinion, that's all they can ask for. So if someone comes and asks while they're not playing or what's the problem, I will tell them the reason behind it. Now they can either accept that and take it on board and do what they have to do to get back in the team. They're not necessarily always going to agree with it, but I think if you're honest with them, I think that players, I know that's how I would have been like to dealt with. So that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned about Brighton Sea Regent and the way the clubs run, because I've always found them, they're one of the friendliest clubs around. And obviously, Terry Doherty, the chairman there, I think the first time we spoke to him on the show, he was coordinating moving a stand from half the length of the country to the ground. Yeah. He fully Brighton Sea through and through. And we often talk about that relationship between chairman and manager and how important that is. Did you know Terry before you got appointed?
I didn't know him at all. The first time I've ever met him was on Sunday when I went for my interview with him. And I say interview very, very loosely, because it was like, and it just goes to show the man himself, is that it was just like I'd known him for years, and we just had a chat about football, and it was so laid back, and he made it very, very comfortable for me to stand there and tell him how I wanted to do things and my views and opinions. It was very, very easy to talk to him, and I think that just goes to show the kind of guy that he is. But at the same time, I think he's got a direction in where he wants to go and where he sees the football club, and it was just where I see myself going. So it was a really good chat on Sunday, and obviously they thought the same, and thankfully I got the job, and we'll see where it takes us now.
Well, it's great to hear another person's view on a chairman that I respect fully as well.
No, I was just going to say, we're talking about your next couple of games. It might be a good time to play Potter's Bar after, you know what it's like yourself, that they have a massive game against Barnet. No matter how that goes, win or lose, as a football manager, it's sometimes difficult to motivate your team in the next game. So it might be a reasonable time to be playing them. I'm sure I know Lee well. He played for me. He won't be happy with it, but it's a fact, and we all know it. It's just one of them. It's one of them difficult days. Is the day after the big game.
Yeah, if they win, then they'll all be on a high, won't they? And they may be taking their foot off it. And if they lose, it's one of those where, well, we play Barnet on Saturday. Now we're playing
exactly.
Yeah,
you know,
it could be one of those. Yeah, but at the same time, I think we can get carried away in looking at opposition. I think that's what I've learned, and something that I've always wanted to take in is that, yes, you need to be mindful of the opposition, but we need to worry about getting our house in order and making sure that we do the things that we can control and make sure that we're in charge of our own destiny or what we can control. So, yes, we are mindful of what their strengths and their weaknesses are and what they're capable of, but I think we have to focus on our own strengths and make sure that we're on it on that day, and then see where that game takes us. Because if we play well and we do what we're capable of doing, then we'll give anyone a game.
I'm pleased you said that, because obviously I was going to mention your first home game is against Royston Town in the FA Trophy, and Dave's already roasted them already on the show today. Yeah.
So. I just said that they have a very difficult cup tie against Maldon and Tiptree. You know, so they've got two hard games now. We've spoke to you, Cam.
Kem, thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. It's been great to talk to you. We wish you well. We'll be following your progress and good luck with it all.
Thank you very much.
Another young manager with plenty of experience. I mean, we didn't even mention it. They used to play for Senrab, which is one of these sort of junior sides that have brought through John Terry, Jermaine Defoe, loads and loads of players that sort of from that South London area.
Yeah.
So, I mean, his contacts book must be as good as any other manager in step three.
That'll be big. That'll be massive. We've talked about recruitment today, and every day we'll talk about recruitment. He's worked under John Coventry, so he'll have great experience under John. And John's a calm manager. We're talking about calm managers. I get the feeling that Cam ain't. It's funny how you get a feeling about managers. I think he could roast the dressing room. That's fine. It's all different ways. I think as a young manager, the balance between friendship and being their manager is massive, and he covered that. I think being honest with players and keeping players motivated is a big part of it. And, you know, I would always say that success isn't necessarily about the 11 players on the pitch. It's about the rest of them, you know, and if you can keep them on board, buying into what you're doing, you know, and it just keeps it competitive. And in today's football, with so many teams around, people will leave you if you leave them out, they'll leave you for a £5 note. And if you can keep them all on board, especially the ones not in the team, I think. So man management is a massive part of it. But it's always nice to hear the enthusiasm as opposed to cynicism when you get to the other end of the road, you know. But so, we wish him well. And to be fair, I spoke briefly about Lee O'Leary at Potter's Bar. Lee played for me at Wimbledon and against me for Hendon over the years. And good lad, and you know, they're doing well, and it's just great to watch these lads progress into management.
So let's round off the show and head on over to the Non-League Paper Towers, and welcome back to the Non-League Show. David Richardson, senior writer at the Non-League Paper. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure, sir. Now, I'm guessing, just as we've had on this show, that there's going to be an FA Cup focus this weekend with plenty to be excited about.
Yes, definitely. Very much so. We're covering every game as we have been doing over the last sort of few rounds. And of course, we're at that stage now, the fourth round qualifying, where you're just 90 minutes away from getting in the first round. And as we know, all the profile that can bring for non-league clubs, when you've got the likes of Portsmouth and Sunderland that you could be pulled out of the hat. But no, before then, like you say, we've got all the coverage this weekend of those fourth round qualifying ties. There's some really good ones in there. Obviously, Belper going to Notts County is one that stands out. There's obviously the two TV games as well to look out for on BBC and BT at lunchtime and in the evening, respectively. So, looking forward to a really good weekend of FA Cup action.
Yeah, and there is that big goal at the end. There's the prize money as well. But I have also just had the confirmation from the FA of the buy with the demise of Berry. There'll be a spare, basically the last ball in the bag that comes out gets a buy in the first round proper and the prize money, which could be, for a non-league club, that would be all your dreams come true, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we've sort of been wondering what was going to happen. That obviously Berry expelled from the Football League and therefore couldn't take part in the FA Cup this season, and as a result of that, the competition is running with a team short. So let's hope it's a non-league side getting that bye on Monday night. But it's another little sort of element, I guess, to the draw, where if you're getting if your number hasn't been called out and you're getting towards the end, you probably don't want it to come out. And then get into the second round then, pick up the prize money as well. So it's an interesting one. I'm not sure quite whether that's happened before, but so. That'll be interesting to look out for Monday night.
Yeah, certainly adds to the drama, doesn't it? And talk about drama. I mean, I spoke last week to Matt Badcock about the two big managerial changes in the National League. And then we had a couple of postponements due to travel issues on the Saturday. And another manager lost his job without even playing.
Yeah, that's right, Dave Challoner. I was off last week, which seemed like quite a good one to be missing, despite it being non-league day. But quite a busy Saturday, obviously, with some postponed games called off due to an incident at Euston. I think it was Dover travelling up to Barrow, and Dagenham were going to Stockport, and also Sutton at Fylde. Their games were postponed, so travelling up on the train. And as a result of that, Fylde manager Dave Challoner was chopped. A difficult start for them, obviously. I think they were my pick to win the league, and as things currently stand in the relegation zone, no one really saw this start coming. Dave Challoner has always been such a good servant for the club. He took a drop in levels when he first went there, and seen their rise up through the leagues to where they are now. Of course, they won the FA Trophy in May on the finals day. They also were at Wembley the week before that, when they left in the playoff final to Salford. Here we are now, four or five months later, and he's not in the job anymore. So I guess that's the ruthless way of football. The timing was a surprise, obviously, seeing that on Saturday. I think it was announced at about 3:30, which was about 30 minutes into the first half, usually, had they been playing. But I saw today that Chairman David Hayes-Thornwhite, obviously a real driving force at the club with everything they've done over the years, basically said that the decision had already been made last week following their defeat in midweek against Chesterfield, another team struggling. And he'd been in Japan for the Rugby World Cup, so he didn't want to call Dave Challoner or send an email and do it that way. So he came back once the France-England game had been postponed. When they met on Saturday, he obviously delivered the news. And interestingly, he said, had Fylde beaten Sutton 4-0 that day, it still wouldn't have changed the decision. Obviously, it would have made that conversation a little bit tougher, I imagine. But, it was it was already made up what they were going to do.
Yeah, but as you intimated it, what a tough life it can be to be a manager. You know, two appearances at Wembley in May, and then by October, he might be looking for a train down to Wembley at the moment to fill his time, Dave Challoner. But I'm sure he'll be back in football. A lovely guy and a man that knows the non-league so well as well. So I'm sure it won't be long before he's back in a job. An interesting development this week, after the weekend, up at Ilkeston Town. Now, there's a club that's had plenty of drama in recent years, even before this week. But the former player Mark Clifford, he came in just 2 months ago, I think, as head coach. And this week, he finds himself as the new owner, having headed a takeover. And former chairman Alan Hardy, who, again, had done so well just to get the club back on its feet and even surviving, he's left. And I understand the club's debts have also been cleared as well. So it's sort of like a fairy tale, almost like a Disney dream for Ilkeston Town fans.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. The manager taking over the club, it's something that clearly doesn't happen very often. Obviously, Alan Hardy had a lot of problems at Notts County last season, which has been well documented. And at the same time, he also owned Ilkeston, who last season were at step five, but they won the league under Lee Fowler and got promoted. But, I think after the experience at Notts County and with his own business going into administration, he was looking to sort of get out of football ownership, really. And obviously, like you say, the managers come in and stepped up, and it seems like, judging by the statement that they've put out, the club kind of future going forward looks pretty safe. I think I was reading it, and they said there's millions sort of pounds has been invested into sort of the future and the ground, the club, etc. And I know it wasn't sort of all plain sailing last season, despite them winning the title. So I guess that's good to see. Obviously, there's always an element of apprehension, I guess, with takeovers and sort of how they come about and the process of the fit and proper persons test, etc. But we'll have to wait and see on that, I guess. But for the meantime, the proposal and the takeover looks a pretty steady one.
Yeah, I know many managers that would probably like to take over their own club, but to actually make it happen is quite an achievement. If it all goes through, and of course we also had the draws for the FA Vars and FA Trophy competitions this week. We've set up some interesting ties that we'll be looking forward to next weekend. I guess the first of those.
Yeah. We'll be covering the draws in the paper this weekend. I'd say they're quickly coming around. Obviously, the competition is all well underway. It always sort of catches me off guard, really, with the FA Cup and the Vars and the Trophy, sort of how early they start. And then finally, eventually, it comes around to those finals at Wembley on Monday Finals Day, which I always sort of maintain as one of the great sort of days in the non-league calendar, really, each year. So we're looking ahead to those in the paper this week, and also looking forward to those weekends of the cup competitions.
Yeah, and I you did touch on it earlier because you had a week off, and we didn't like to say that your absence was noted, but you mentioned non-league day, and we should say that although it was a bit of a damp weekend, it seemed to be another successful event across the country. It's some great coverage from the professional game, actually, particularly the Premier League really getting behind the campaign. Big mentions on Football Focus, and it just shows how the whole campaign's been taken to the heart of the football community in this country.
Obviously the 10th installment of the event, and like you say, there seems to be loads of national media coverage of the day, which of course bode well for the event itself. There was more great crowds. I think Clapton had 900, Dulwich had 3,000 again, and loads of sort of great sort of quirky schemes as well. throughout sort of across the country and throughout non-league. And it's good to see sort of the Premier League clubs urging their fans to get out to sort of local non-league sides around them. So another roaring success. I know sort of how hard James Doe and the guys work putting together that campaign, which they all do for the love of non-league and for the love of the game. And hopefully that it will continue growing next year as we look ahead to the 11th year, which is amazing, really, because it doesn't seem all that long ago that it was starting off sort of as a Facebook event in 2010, and here we are now. But another roaring success, I think, despite the damp conditions and the train delays, etc., and managerial departures. But I guess that's typical of what non-league is and the unexpected nature. So a good day all round, really.
Yeah, very non-league with all those managerial departures, but quite a quiet one this week. It's still early days, says David. I've still got to write some copy. What else can you expect to read in Sunday's paper then?
Well, I spoke to Liam Watson this week, who's Southport manager, and he celebrated his 500th game in charge last weekend. As he told me, he's actually getting towards 1,000. It was his 981st in total for his career, which he said made him realise felt old, although he's only 49 on Monday. So he's been in management for a long time. He's always great to speak to, so many stories of his time at Southport and other clubs. Obviously, he's won the Conference North Tonsor three times, twice with Southport and once with Telford, and obviously he's back at Southport now to try and get a third one with them. So I spoke to him. I've also spoken to Simon Weaver at Harrogate Town, who are in really good form in the National League at the moment. Unbeaten in their last seven and sort of back on the cusp of the playoffs again after a somewhat sort of mixed start, really. But of course, they enjoyed a great first year in the National League last season, the highest level that they've ever played at. Good to speak to him as well. He's always sort of a very down to earth and respectful of where the club's at, but also at the same time wanting to move the club forward. With his dad Irving, who's the chairman, and is another sort of real driving force at the club. I think that's sort of just about it for what
just about it with all those match reports as well to read. It's time to put your feet up on a Sunday, having with all these FA Cup games as well taking place on Saturday this time round rather than spread around. It's more time to read the paper on Sunday.
Yeah, let's hope so. We had a sort of difficult week last week, I think, with some sort of distribution problems with the vans, and I think we'll gloss over that if you can get out on Sunday and pick up the paper somewhere. It's so, always much appreciated.
Yeah, make sure you got your subscription in and you're guaranteed to get hold of it. David, thanks for joining us once again in the Non-League Football Show. Have a great weekend and speak to you soon.
Thanks very much, Tim.
So that's it for this week. A big thank you to Dave Anderson for joining me.
Yeah, good to be here, Tim.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you. A big thank you to all of our guests. A big thank you to everybody that listens. Don't forget you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson at Dave Anderson 78, Caroline Barker at Caroline Barker, and myself at Tim Fuel. Plus, you can, of course, find us every week on Audio Boom on iTunes, or Apple Podcasts, as it's now called, Stitcher, Deezer, Tuning Radio, Smart Speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA. JABBA.